live on the phone with Iowa U.S. Senator Charles Grassley. Welcome, Senator, and glad we didn't scare you off last month.
Well, hey, you didn't scare me off, and you know, I was in Dubuque yesterday for a couple three events, I guess it was, and I really enjoyed my time there. I was with the Optimist Club at noon for kind of a town meeting where I answered their questions, and they were very cordial and were willing to give me their opinions and you know, express where they disagreed with me. But it was a very cordial meeting, and they asked a lot of good questions. And then I went to the University of Dubuque, had a meeting with the president. The president took me to a business ethics class, and I had a kind of a town meeting there where the kids asked questions. And then I went to a chemistry class that was where they asked just a couple questions, and then I spent the rest of my time learning something about chemistry as they were in their lab. And so I really enjoyed it. And then I went out to FarmTech.
In case you don't know it, you're featured on page 3 of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on tour at FarmTech in Dyersville. Headline says, Grassley, financial mess, bipartisan. So that means any solution has to be bipartisan, right?
Well, and I was also trying to respond in a way that I think is truthful, but also one that responds to a lot of cynicism that people have about Washington, D.C., one party's not more to blame than the other. And I went back through some changes that were made in the Clinton administration for deregulation. And then I mentioned some issues of overregulation in the Bush administration that may have compounded the problem. And I went back to some of the things that Fannie Mae started in 1999, and both Republicans and Democrats were defending it during the early years of this century, and just generally wanted to explain. I think that was a question where somebody asked me, well, what caused all this? And I said, well, you know, there's not one thing that caused it. There's 5 or 6 different things that caused it, and I probably gave too long of an answer, but I went through each of those 5 or 6 things to bring them up to the point where we're having worldwide credit panic right now, where credit's not flowing, and that's what we have to do something about, and that's what the countries of England, Germany, France, Tokyo, I should say Japan, the United States, and even China to some extent are trying to deal with right now in a meeting that's going on, or I guess it's going to start today, in Washington, D.C.
By the way, I got to ask you, there's a congressional recess now going on, and here we are, the stock market's still continuing to go down. And when I think of that, I'm thinking of that famous picture. There's President Herbert Hoover fishing in the time we were entering into the Great Depression. But why is Congress in recess at this time, considering the economic situation?
Well, quite frankly, all the laws that have been passed need to be passed as far as the credit crunch is concerned. Now, something we could be working on would be some additional changes that need to be made that I'll put in one word, greater transparency in the financial market. So the key word there is transparency. We need to be working on some changes of laws that would do that. Now, I think we could be criticized for not doing that, but I think also that there's a feeling that we need to know if what we've done and what the Fed's doing and what the Secretary of Treasury's doing, all three, Congress, the Fed, and the Treasury, is going to work. And we aren't the only ones faced, is it going to work? Prime Minister Brown is faced with it in England. President Sarkozy is faced with it in Paris, et cetera, around the world. You know, we're trying to get the 20 biggest economies in the world. It's called the Group of 20. And this is partly the group that's meeting in Washington to see if we can get a concerted action. But, you know, every country has different laws, and it's difficult to get concerted action, but at least we've got everybody talking about the problem of it is worldwide, and we're trying to get people at least to do everything within their own country under their own laws and constitution as best they can to correct it. In other words, to get the credit flowing.
Yeah.
You know, when banks won't lend to banks, things are serious.
Oh,
you know,
definitely.
When people will draw out money market funds, when they're not insured, well, they're insured now because of the Secretary of Treasury took some action to insure, but they weren't insured, and so everybody was drawing out their money market funds.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to tell you this, but I know a guy in Iowa who cashed in a $25,000 CD and put the money in a safety deposit box. If everybody's going to draw their money out of a bank and put it in their mattress, like they did in the 1930s, we're not going to have a recession just for a few months. We could have a recession and a depression for a whole decade. It started in 1931, and it didn't end until World War II started in 1942.
That's right.
And what we're doing now, Hoover wouldn't do, and by the time FDR got around to doing it, it was too late.
Mm-hmm. How far away are we from a depression? Is a depression inevitable?
Well, I take it by steps.
Okay.
Recession will be two quarters of no growth. And I believe the last quarter of this year and the first quarter of next year will be two quarters of no growth. So sometime in March, we'll have an official recession. And then will it be a depression? We've got so many things to protect us now, and they've worked in the past because we haven't had such a thing for 80 years. We got unemployment compensation. We've got the FDIC insurance, and that's been increased to $250,000 now. We have the Secretary of Treasury investing in banks and taking stock as collateral. And they didn't do enough of that in the 1930s, although they did a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1930s, New York was never talking to London and London to Frankfurt, and nobody cared much about Tokyo. And we've got a global economy now, and things can happen in just a few minutes. We got people communicating now how to let this not happen. Whereas in 1930, we were isolated from the rest of the world, and Hoover got the Smoot-Hawley tariff protection, a trade protection bill passed.
Right.
And that started every other country doing protectionism, and pretty soon the world economy shut down.
Yeah.
And it was 10 years before, the war turned it around.
Right. When we first talked in the third week of September, the bailout bill was pending before Congress, particularly before the House, and you mentioned the time that your office was getting responses from people, a lot more people against it than in favor. What's the general trend today?
Well, I think with the news going on as it is going on, and General Motors dealers in Iowa telling me that nationwide, 15,000 less cars are sold by GM because credit is tightening up, or you got parents that are worried about getting money for their kids to go to college next year, or you have the president of Vermeer in Pella. They manufacture heavy-duty equipment. They sell it worldwide, and they're worried about their dealers worldwide. Well, they sell it about a third of it worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried about their dealers getting credit, and she goes to Washington to tell that to the president and other people. It kind of wakes you up that things are a little bit different this week than they were 3 weeks ago when I talked to you. And it just happened very fast. I think didn't I mention to you just a couple minutes ago that how money market, 2 weeks ago, well, it'd be 16 days ago now, overnight, there was just a massive withdrawal of money market funds. So much so that the federal government had to step in and say, we're going to insure them. They've never been insured before. FDIC doesn't insure money markets. They just insure savings accounts.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to take a break, Senator, and then when we get back, we'll talk some more and get questions from listeners here on Voices of the Tri-State. Senator, I saw a news story. It quoted House Speaker Pelosi saying that another bailout is needed, and the figure I remember from that story is about 150 million or billion. Is this a bailout for the bailout, or do we need to give the original bailout more time?
Oh, I think are you sure that she's not talking about a second stimulus package?
And maybe I did confuse it. I thought it had something to do with a bailout, but you could very well be right.
Yeah, it's a second stimulus package, and I think it's more along the line of money for infrastructure than it is for the checks that went out in the spring.
Good. I'm glad you corrected me on that.
And now, is it needed? I'm leery about it being needed right now until I find out how the bill we already passed, plus all the more that the Fed's doing on their own. In fact, I always say what we did a week ago is a spit in the ocean compared to what the Fed can do on their own with their own money and with what the Secretary of Treasury can do. But anyway, we need to find out if that's working. And then the second thing about infrastructure stimulus package, as bad as we need, you know, highways built and all that sort of stuff, or buildings that can be put up, that's what you call infrastructure, it tends to be countercyclical. By the time the money actually gets out the door and gets in projects and people get hired, you tend to be coming out of recession, and then it tends to be countercyclical. We haven't used infrastructure stimulus much since the 1970s, because that's what we found out in the 1970s. And so I'm a little leery of going that route. I would rather have a tax reduction as a stimulus than I would an infrastructure package.
Senator, we do have a caller. Let's go to Russ. Welcome to the program, Russ. What question or comment do you have for the senator?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question for the senator. In this whole mess that's going on with this economy, and
can you talk louder, please?
Yeah, I was going to say that I haven't heard any mention of any of the crooks or culprits that caused this being investigated and prosecuted and made and held responsible for this. And until that happens, I'm still 100% against this bailout.
Yeah. Well, if you know how slow... Well, first of all, let me tell you this, that there are at least 27 institutions being investigated by the FBI, and that means the people within those institutions are being investigated, and that would include AIG, Bear Stearns, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac, to name four of the 27. And I can't name all of them because haven't read what all of them are, but that's been going on for a while, and I don't think they would announce it publicly that they were doing those investigations if they didn't think that there was really something wrong.
So there is some investigation going on.
So then can I speak to your point about you're against this until we prosecute people? Well, you know how long it takes to prosecute murderers in America.
Yes.
And if we waited that long to stop the worldwide panic, not just the panic in the United States, we'd for sure be in a depression. And so I would beg you to consider that the government can walk and chew gum at the same time, and we can do two things at the same time, because you got the FBI doing one, and you got the Secretary of the Treasury doing the other, and the Fed doing the other.
Well, I'm fine with that as long as there is something being done.
Well, for instance, one of the things that irritates me is the chutzpah of these people with AIG that go to California and spend $500,000 in a spa at the very same time we're loaning them money. Now, we own 80% of that stock. We took 80% of that stock in when we gave them a loan. And so we ought to be controlling that corporation, and we ought to be disciplining those people and getting that money back.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Russ.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Senator, do you agree the government needs to purchase bad mortgages at face value, allow people who may have had made a bad decision in getting the mortgage in the first place stay in their homes, and the company that may have exploited their desire for a new home escaping a bad debt? What do you think about the plan by Senator McCain?
If he would add to it one thing, it would be a good thing to do. And I learned this from the 1980 Farm Depression, when farmers were being foreclosed on. When the federal government was involved in giving loans through the farmer's home to the farmers, and we recapitalized them so they could stay farming, we put in a proposition that if they sold that farm and it went up in value and they were not going to profit from it until they paid back the federal government what it had lost in assuming that loan, if he would put that into that program, then I think it would be a workable deal. Now, I think in the process, though, you don't just go in and buy up all the loans. I think that the financial institution has to take a haircut, too.
Going back, you were in Dubuque yesterday. You met with the Noon Optimists, spent some time up at the University of Dubuque. What specifically did you hear from the Noon Optimists? Were they irritated, too, how things had gone, or do they feel the government's doing the best it can?
Well, first of all, let me say so Iowans know I live in the real world. When you say, do they think Iowans doing the best, or Congress is doing the best they can, I'm well aware of the fact that Congress's approval rating's in the low teens, and that the president's approval rating is under 30. So nobody really thinks Congress is doing much very well. But I can say they know that. I wanted them to know that I know that, as I wanted your listeners to know that. So when I answer your question, it doesn't seem like I'm in fairyland. Mm-hmm. I think that they are frustrated, and I guess a better way to say it, without putting in one word, frustrated plus the fact that there's so much unknown out there. Stock market went down that day $600 or 600 points, and the guy that was there from Spawn and Rose, he's one of their members. He informed me of that, and you can tell that there's a great deal of concern, just of the unknown, and of course, that's why we've got to build confidence. And what actions are being taken in London and Frankfurt and Paris and New York and Tokyo right now, or being discussed by these countries' leaders in Washington, is what can we do to build confidence? It's not necessarily a quantifiable thing, but there's a lot of bad paper that's in the pipeline, plugging up good money getting out. And so what we're trying to do in the United States is take some of that bad paper out of the pipeline so the good credit can flow and hold that asset as deteriorated as it is. You know, it might be 10 cents on the dollar. In other words, if you, Mr. Berryman, would be in a financial situation as a banker and you put up your bad paper for 10 cents and Chuck Grassley put up his bad paper for 9 cents, they ought to take my 9 cents before they take your 10 cents. And then hold my 9 cents, maybe eventually buy your 10 cents, and hold it for a while until home prices level off and start back up, and then we put it back on the market, the very same way we did Chrysler stock in 1980 when we made about $300 or $400 million on it.
Mm-hmm. And when the few minutes we have left. Does the American business community, well, we're going through so much tension and so much uncertainty, as you've said today, but I'm wondering if the American business community that has supported deregulation in the past realizes that's not an option now. It's going to be a while before, if we ever return to it, it's going to have to be way down the line. Do you think they realize that?
There might not be enough regulation. But I don't buy that we've had a lot of deregulation just in the Bush administration, because the real deregulation came in 1999 when a bill passed the Senate 92-8, so that's a bipartisan vote, in a Democrat administration, and Clinton signed it, that took down the wall that started in 1933 between commercial banking and investment banking. That took place then. It had bipartisan support. And then we had, unrelated to that bill, then we had Enron, and probably what the Bush administration did in Enron, and it was a bipartisan, almost unanimous vote, was to pass Sarbanes-Oxley, that was basically creating so much burdensome regulation on business that a lot of our business was going to move out of the country to a point where Senator Schumer now, who's blaming Bush for everything, and Barney Frank's blaming Bush for everything, we had Senator Schumer a year ago, and if you got on your internet, you could find this someplace last fall. Schumer wrote a letter or op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal saying how egregious Sarbanes-Oxley was, and that we're losing a lot of our business to London and a lot of employees leaving New York City to go to London because they had less regulation than what we had. And now he's the one saying that we had too much deregulation when just a year ago he was complaining about too much overregulation.
How is the credit crunch affecting business in Iowa? Things are tight. What kind of feedback have you received?
Well, not as much as I hear from other parts of the country. I told you about, you know, the Vermeer story. I told you about car dealers in Iowa. I think that it's going to come to Iowa later because of the strong agricultural economy.
How about the effect of the economy having now with people on fixed incomes, Social Security, maybe a military pension? Will that have any effect on those funds?
Well, it sure will if they're near retirement. Within 2 years, let's say, if they're within 2 years, they ought to be moving some of their money from stocks anyway to bonds and or should have had it moved to bonds and money markets, more fluid and more less ups and downs. If you're 7 or 8 years away, I'd say don't worry. If you remember right now, I don't have the television on, but if I had it on, I imagine that we're close to being a little bit below $8,000. That's where we were 9/11, 2001, when the terrorists blew up New York. We came back within 4 years to where, in less than 4 years, we gained that back where we were on 9/10. And then 1 year ago this week, we reached a new historic high. So all the advice that I get from reading these journals on people that are experts in investing, if you're in it for the long haul of more than 6-7 years, you ought to just not worry.
Yeah. Senator, we do have a caller we want to get in. Let's go to the Mrs. Brown, what question or comment do you have for the senator?
Grassley said, after FDR, we were worse off and the worst was over. I was a young farm girl in those days, and you can't tell me that.
Okay, what did she say? I can't hear her.
After FDR, there have been a lot of people that would have been buried deeper than...
What did she say?
Can you speak up, please? The senator had a
hard time. I'd like to have you repeat it.
Okay. She was saying that she takes issue with your remark about FDR, that she was a farm girl in the 30s and things didn't particularly, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, didn't improve under FDR. Is that right, Mrs.
They
Brown?
Did. No, they did. If it wasn't for him, things would have been a lot worse.
She said that things did improve, and if it wasn't for him, they'd been an awful mess.
Then let me quantify her answer.
Okay,
I can quantify it because you can't argue with figures. We, when he took office, we had 25% unemployment. We still had 10% unemployment when World War II started. So I'm saying we still were in depression throughout the 1930s, just based upon the unemployment rate. And so I'm not saying he didn't make things better, because he did make things better. But the Depression wasn't over until World War II hit.
That's true. Senator, we've got to go. We've run out of time. But thank you very much, and we will get together for sure in November.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.